David Baldacci became a writer to watch in 1996 with the publication of his first novel, Absolute Power. A film adaptation followed with Clint Eastwood as its director and star. In total, David has published 27 best-selling novels, many of which have been adapted for film and TV. A lifelong Virginian, David earned his law degree from the University of Virginia and went on to practice law in Washington, D.C. David and his wife have established the Wish You Well Foundation, supporting family and adult literacy in the United States. In 2008, the foundation partnered with Feeding America to launch Feeding Body and Mind, a program addressing the connection between literacy, poverty, and hunger. Through Feeding Body and Mind, more than 1 million new and used books have been collected and distributed through food banks to families in need. I'm really looking forward to speaking with David today about his new title, King and Maxwell, so let's get to it. Welcome, David. It's great to have you back with us on the Book Report.
Oh, thank you.
Your longtime fans are devoted to Sean King and Michelle Maxwell. How do you manage to introduce them to new readers while moving the story along for returning fans?
Well, I think you can read it as a little bit of a standalone because I give you enough information about who they are and where they come from. So if this is the first one you picked up, you won't be totally lost, although it helps to have read some of the others. And for the returning fans, I think that twofold. One is they have to have an interesting plot or mystery they have to solve, but I think that returning fans want to see their relationship grow and expand and evolve, and I've tried to do that in this novel.
Right. So in this novel, introduce us to Tyler Wingo.
He is a 16-year-old kid whose dad is in the military, and he is running through a thunderstorm with a gun, and he's almost hit by King and Maxwell as they're driving down the road, and they stop and try to help him. And he has just learned from the Army that his dad has been killed in action in Afghanistan. But a couple of days later, he gets a coded email from his father that shows that maybe his dad is not dead, and that's why he brings on King and Maxwell to try to figure out what is going on.
Right. And as the book opens, as you say, we meet his dad on a secret military mission driving a truck through Afghanistan. He travels on to Pakistan and over the Khyber Pass. To set the scene so effectively, do you speak with returning vets?
I know a lot of military personnel in the Washington, D.C. area. There are a lot of them, obviously, and a lot of them are my friends. And I know people in all branches of the military, and I certainly talked with a lot of them. One, to try to understand, you know, the pressures and the stresses that military families have. Certainly the bereavement sequence I wanted to get right because that was so personal and important and sensitive. So, I did a lot of research in order to try to get it as accurate as I possibly could.
In this book, you kept me really intrigued with Tyler's stepmom, Jean. Can you fill us in a little about her?
Yeah, in a lot of my books, I try to create characters that are not what they seem to be. So she's a stepmom. She's obviously very upset that her husband has been killed, and she's trying to wrangle and help Tyler. But as the story goes on, you realize that Jean is really not what you thought Jean was supposed to be. And that's an element that I think adds intrigue to the story and also makes it complicated.
Yeah, that, I really liked her. All right, email and texting are so central to the King and Maxwell plot. What's your opinion of governmental monitoring of private communications to ostensibly keep us safe?
Yeah, I think the pendulum has swung too far the other way. And when I was in law school, one of the edicts we learned was that the slippery slope is indeed slippery. And we want to be safe, but we also want to have our privacy. It's a very tricky balance. I think that with all the media stories coming out now, the pendulum is going to swing back towards more privacy and not having the government intrude. But, you know, with that said, there are a lot of corporations. You know, when you go on and do a search online and you do a Google search or you go buy something, they're data mining everything that you're doing. They see exactly what you're buying, what you're looking at, and they sell that information to other retailers. This is why you get lots of emails from other people saying, oh, I saw you bought this, and I think you'd really like that. So no matter what we do online, there's going to be somebody watching.
Right. We meet Sean's ex-wife for the first time in this book. Do you have other characters waiting in the wings for future novels?
Yeah, I do. I mentioned her very briefly in the very first King of Maxwell, a split second, and I sort of held her in my back pocket until this book, and I thought this would be a great time to bring her out because Sean and Michelle's characters have evolved and their relationships have evolved to where the ex-wife would be meaningful, a meaningful foil, certainly for Michelle, and an awkward one for Sean. So I'll do that with a series that I have. I have another one with my military guy, John Puller, where I have a family member sort of waiting in the wings for him to shine in a future book.
Well, as you say, Sean and Michelle are just partners. But what's so great about this story is that there's something more brewing between them. How do you manage to keep up that tension in their relationship?
That is a very tricky balance, too, because sometimes, you know, Moonlighting was a great show until they got together. So, you know, you have to sort of keep the tension, keep the possibilities, let them sort of put their toe in the water and then pull it back out. So with me, it's balancing the professional with the personal. And I've let them become intimate in one other book and then pull back from there. And now they're more just professional. But you know there's more. It's just that each of them have a hard time sort of trying to show that. And but once I, you know, I jump that shark, there's no going back.
Right. We're speaking with David Baldacci on The Book Report. Well, with King and Maxwell as one of your recurring characters' storylines, do new storylines just bubble up for you when you're walking down the street or at odd moments?
Absolutely. I mean, you never know when an idea for a plot is going to hit you. And I like to travel. I like to meet new people and visit places. And I think the more that I learn about the world and people in general, it sort of fills up my well of ideas and possible plots. So it's not like you're born with a finite number of ideas, and then once you, you know, extinguish them, you're done. So I like to get out and see things. And I've always thought that the more I know about a lot of different things, the more compelling and complicated plots I can come up with.
Right. Well, I see that recently you've crossed over to a younger audience as well. Tell us about The Finisher.
I spent 5 years writing that novel. I sold it under a pseudonym to Scholastic, and it's going to come out in March. It's a fantasy that takes you to a brand new world that I think is really very original. I don't think anything else has really been written in this way before. When Scholastic bought it, they thought I was a Brit. They wanted me to come over from England to meet with them because I sold under a pseudonym. They were stunned to learn that it was actually me. And Sony Columbia bought the film rights for it a couple of months ago. They see it could be sort of like a Hunger Games, Harry Potter franchise for them, because it's one of a multiple number of books that I plan to write on this. So it's been quite a leap for me, but I loved it. Because, you know, with my novels, I have to, you know, I write fiction, but everything has to be based on fact, and I can't have people flying, you know, without benefit of a plane and things like that. So with the fantasy, I was able to just let my imagination run.
Well, how do you juggle all the projects that you're working on? Do you work at one at a time, or do you work on multiples?
Well, during the course of the day, I might work on two or three different projects. You know, you work on something for 2 or 3 hours, and you're extinguished with that. I have nothing left that I can add to that today. But instead of just going home and not doing anything else, I jump over to something else and keep going, because it's just fun for me. I think that's one reason I'm so prolific. I've never treated writing as a job. It's just wonderfully fun for me. I feel like I'm just a kid again, you know, writing my little stories that I, like I used to do back in Richmond.
You're lucky. So is there another King and Maxwell novel in the works, or what's next?
Well, next year in February, I have an ebook only coming out. It's like a long short story or a short novella where I bring back the Camel Club and combine them with Will Robey from my other series. And in March, The Finisher is published. And then April, I have a full-length thriller coming out called The Target, and that's going to bring Will Robey and Jessica Reel back from the novel last year called The Hit.
I so was amazed at your philanthropy, Feeding Body and Mind. How can readers help? And tell us a little more about it.
Yeah, 15 years ago, my wife and I founded the Wishiwell Foundation, and we support and fund literacy efforts across the United States. We've done programs to about all 50 states and counting. And we also have a program called Feeding Body and Mind. We partner with Feeding America, which runs all the nation's food banks, and we collect books, my book tours, and ship those to food banks around the country. We've collected in the last 4 years over 1 million books. The idea being that people seeking food assistance often have low literacy skills, low job skills. They can't be really financially independent. So food keeps them alive, but doesn't break them out of the cycle of poverty. So what we try to do is get books, literacy, reading into the forefront of their lives, in their homes, in the lives of their children. With those higher reading skills, higher literacy skills lead to better jobs and more independent and productive life.
So how could a reader help? Could a reader make a donation?
You can go to either davidbaldacci.com and click on philanthropy, or you can go to wishyouwellfoundation.org, and that'll tell you a lot of the details you need to know if you want to help.
All right. Well, David, any final thoughts?
I'm glad people will continue to enjoy the books, and I certainly enjoy writing them.
Well, and we certainly enjoy reading them. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All righty, bye.